All right, you're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and thanks for getting in touch with us. Last week, I asked if you wanted to email us any thoughts or constructive criticisms. That would be great. And a whole bunch of you did. Got a lot of good sort of suggestions and ideas. And like I said, a few critiques that are valuable. I like this email we got. I'm 33 and never really cooked. And I got excited when I started to listen to food podcasts and started to really fall in love with the food and cooking. And your podcast is so inspiring. And he goes on, I would love to hear more stories about things to cook during each season when those seasons are happening. And that's something I agree with. I love when we talk cooking and food and technique with our test kitchen editors. And that's what I do today in anticipation of Memorial Day this weekend. I sit down with Carla Lolly Music, our food director, and Rick Martinez, senior food editor. We talked about what we're going to be grilling and drinking and eating this weekend because it's finally spring and almost summer. So here we go. Thanks, guys. We are recording this on the Monday before Memorial Day, and it's 73 and gorgeous out. Finally.
I can only hope that it lasts.
Well, judging how our spring has been so far, it'll probably be like 52 and rainy by Wednesday.
No, probably.
Don't say that.
All right. Let's cross our fingers and imagine a glorious, sparkly, sunny Memorial Day weekend. Let's talk about what we're finally cooking, some summer cooking. So we're going to go around the table today and talk about what we're grilling, what we're drinking, and then ice cream. Carla.
Yes, sir.
What do you got?
Well, I love to grill. Memorial Day is all about being outside, grilling and chilling.
And you got a backyard there in Brooklyn?
I do have a backyard in Brooklyn. I have a pretty rad little fire set up right now, but I'm going to be in Connecticut with the parents. And my mom also has a pretty sweet grilling situation.
Then do you and your mom duke it out, or how does that work?
So there's a lot of menu planning. Usually there's about 300 emails leading up to any weekend that we spend together. So those haven't started yet. I expect that to start today.
Rick is silently laughing over here in the corner.
Yeah. I've heard the email chains, especially for holidays, like Thanksgiving, the worst.
We love chicken and sausages, actually, is one of our favorite things to grill. That will probably happen. And we also, usually, if we're all together, we'll make pizza in the oven one night and do a lot of toppings and have fun with that. But what we haven't done this yet, and I'm going to turn my mom onto it. We've done chicken under a brick a million times. But the way that I've been making it now, and I stand by it, I think it's awesome, and it's awesome for people who haven't done it before, is you actually do the chicken under a brick in a cast iron skillet.
On top of the grill.
On the grill. The thing I love about it is that you don't get any grease splatter onto the coals, which is one of the big things that happens because you want to do skin side down with chicken under a brick much the whole time. And then you've got a flare-up situation, and then you might have a sticking. And then the other thing that always bothered me is you lose all of your chicken drippings and your crispy bits.
AKA the good part.
Exactly. And it can just be really hard to manage and, you know, hot spots and stuff like that.
So how many pounds will the chicken be and how many inches is the skillet? And is it a cast iron skillet?
It's a cast iron skillet. I only have a 12 inch. My mom has got the 10, the 12, and like whatever the bigger one than that is.
Probably. So I'm going to go with 14. But like a basic 3.5 pound chicken, like from the market?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to get anything smaller than that.
So how do you season it up? And what's your technique?
I really love to do a combination of crushed red pepper flakes, salt and pepper, and maybe some ground fennel. But you don't have to do much. I mean, that's sort of classic Italian with the fennel and the hot chili. Mm-hmm. We have a recipe online, the spicy grilled chicken with lemon and parsley, which was from a restaurant called Chispaca. And they do a mixture of paprika and cayenne and salt. And that one's really good too, but it does go spicy with the cayenne.
And that gives it some color also, right?
It has a really beautiful color.
All right, so for the listeners at home, if you're doing chicken under the brick or pollo al mattone in Italiano, I think that's correct. And then do you use an actual brick or some other sort of weight?
We have actual bricks up there.
And you wrap them in foil? Or
you should, yeah. Wrap your bricks, two bricks wrapped in foil. Mm-hmm. You want to preheat the cast iron skillet over a medium-high direct flame. Mm-hmm. Let that cast iron skillet get really hot, so like at least 5 minutes. Little slick of olive oil. Mm-hmm. Put that chicken in, skin side down. Mm. Weight him down. give a, I guess it's a she, weight her down and just let it go.
How long are we letting it go?
I think that you need to keep an eye on what's happening. So rather than give a time, the things to look for is brown skin where you can see where the chicken and the cast iron skillet are connecting. You want to see things start to get brown and crispy over there. And when you do, you can lift it up. Always lift from the drumstick. This is a good trick to not ripping the skin over the flesh of the breast. So you can just pick it up by the drumsticks and kind of see what's going on under there. And I cook it, I would say 80% of the way through breast side down.
Which is about how many minutes if you're going to
guess? I would say 25.
And then you flip it over for another 5 minutes?
And then you flip it over just to get the underside browned up.
And then you just let it rest on a cutting board?
I would let it rest on a cutting board at least 10, 15 minutes, but it'll be great room temperature.
You know what I don't like? I don't like piping hot roast chicken where like you cut into it and it steams and like I wanted that kind of more warm.
Yeah.
Juicy,
I just want the skin to still be crisp.
Yeah.
So.
And probably
on the side we'd have some sausages going because we love a chicken and sausage situation.
Why not? Yeah. Sausage is like, it's almost like cheating. When you get good Italian sausages and you throw them on a grill because they're so flavorful and so easy and you're just like, wow.
I never think of it as cheating. It's just like, I just think of it as winning.
It's winning.
Exactly.
Well, all right. I'm successfully hungry on that one, Carla. Thank you. Rick, what do you got going?
I am a big fan of flank steak. Flank and skirt. I think... I like to get a little showy when I grill.
This doesn't surprise me somehow.
If you've seen Rick's watch or his apron or some of his shirts on any of the videos for bonappetit.com, you will know Rick's flair for showmanship.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you're from Texas. You got
this
grilling thing going on. So you're a flank steak. What are we doing with it?
So, I mean, it's versatile. It takes on flavor really easily. So you can do rubs. You can do quick marinades. You can marinate it for 30 minutes. It'll take on some of the flavor. You can throw it in beer, chipotle, lemon, garlic, ginger, soy overnight. You've got like a really, really flavorful steak. The other great thing about it is it takes about 3 minutes per side. And this is where I like to be a little showy. It flares up, which is kind of fun. So you've got like, you know, a garden full of guests, throw it on the grill, you get a nice little flare up. You know, 4 minutes, everybody's eating delicious steak in a taco or on a pita.
Yeah, so how
salad.
Do you serve it?
Perfect medium rare, maybe a little bit further to the rare side. Okay. I like mine a little bit rare.
And flank you can't overcook or it's going to get...
No, it'll get really gross. So I'm probably going to do some tacos because one of the other things that I like to do is you fill the grill up with both steak and then I like to do veggies. And so I'll throw on some tomatillos and some tomatoes, some onions, some peppers, some serrano or jalapeno. And that'll be the base for my salsa.
Are you throwing that directly on a grill or in a skillet on the grill or what are you doing?
Directly on the grill.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're taking all that and you're chopping it or pureeing it or what?
I'll just smash it. Like if I'm I'll probably have people over in the garden and so I'll just bring a bowl and a potato masher and just like mash everything together and that'll be the salsa for the tacos.
Wow. And just a little lime juice in there or anything?
A little
else?
Lime juice, a little salt, smash up some raw garlic in there or like grated in there. And you've got like instant grilled salsa.
Do you oil the veg first? Before you put it on?
No. So no. The thing about oiling veg or oiling anything before you grill it is if your fire is really hot, you'll actually burn the oil and you'll get that acrid burnt oil flavor.
Yeah. That's not good.
You'll also get flare-ups. It's best to just get a really nice washed and dried veg. Throw it on the grill, let it get that really nice char on it.
I like that lesson. Yeah, I always thought you had to oil it, but then you do get those flare-ups and then it's burnt before it's cooked.
Right.
And that's no fun.
No, it's not good at all.
Potato masher salsa.
Yeah, I like that.
I just have never.
That's
never
easy.
In my
that's
life.
A video. We have so many video ideas.
Yeah.
All right, what about the tortillas?
Corn, definitely.
Yeah. I'll just eat flour because if you're going down that fajita, the sizzling fajita route, you know, a little more Tex-Mex. And you are from Texas.
I am from Texas. I am very particular about my flour tortillas, though.
Which, let's talk about that.
Okay. When my mother or my aunts make them, amazing. Store-bought flour tortillas are just not good. Now, if I actually had the time and the wherewithal, I would make them and they would be amazing. But corn tortillas also, I feel like on a grill, when you get those nice toasted grill marks, a little bit of char on a corn tortilla, they just bring all the flavors of the taco together.
How do you keep a corn tortilla from drying out on the grill?
I
feel like I've done that, and then they become brittle.
And then how do you keep them warm and moist once they're off the grill?
Okay. So what I normally do after I've made my steak and my salsa, so the grill is still probably around medium high. So it's probably about 500 degrees. So you literally want to throw on the tortillas and leave them on maybe 5 to 10 seconds per side. It's got to be really hot. You'll get that nice charring on both sides. Flip them and then throw them on a piece of foil and then just cover it up. So they basically steam after they're charred.
So that's how they stay moist.
Right. So they'll be nice and pliable. But the other thing too is you want to make sure that you start with really pliable, fresh corn tortillas. And the easiest way to do that is look for the packages that have a little bit of condensation inside the bag. That means that they were bagged recently and they were probably put in warm. So the steam.
I've noticed that, but never knew about that. So for me, my turn, I wrote about it in the current issue. I've got into doing grilled paella, which, as Carla knows me, odd because I'm not a, as I say, not a big seafood guy, although I'm coming around. Also, it's like I would have thought it was a more intimidating undertaking than it is.
Yeah.
And it's weirdly kind of easy. As I wrote about in my editor's letter this month, my friend Megan had done it a few times and I was with her and I was like, oh, I could do that. And then one time I saw Eric Repair, a bit more accomplished of a cook, do it. And you know, he kind of took it to another level. But still, it was not that complicated. And what I did is I got a Creuset paella pan, like kind of a Creuset's cast iron, right?
Yeah. Enamel cast iron.
Yeah. And it's one of those things I had sitting on the top shelf for like 8 years. I don't know where it came from. It was just
awesome.
Was there. And I was like, oh, I'm going to use that. So I guess it was about 14 inches. Had a charcoal fire and a Weber going. Put the pan on top of the fire, but I thought that it would be almost too intense, you know, with the heat, because I had a full bed of coals going. So I put a couple of rocks, or you could use bricks just to sort of elevate.
Yeah.
The pan from the heat to give it a few more inches. And then it was pretty easy. Just chopped up an onion and some pork product. If you can get chorizo, that's great. Dry chorizo. I had pancetta. Threw that in the pan with a little olive oil until it started to simmer. Started to sort of sweat a little. And then rice. And then just a couple of cups of rice right in the pan. I guess the...
It's got to be the bomba.
The Spaniards would use the bomba. I don't even know. I did not have bomba. I forget what I used, but I did not have that. But
I think if you have any kind of short grain white rice is going to work.
Yeah.
So even, I mean, I've made it with sushi rice, you know, it'll work.
I want to say I might have used like Arborio or something.
Yeah, sure. It'll work.
And sort of swirled that around. And then you just start adding stock to cook the rice, to get it going. And one thing I thought was interesting when Repair did it, I mean, he had all of these beautiful ingredients from Le Bernardin, but he had like a trio of stocks.
Mm.
So I was like, to kind of give some more depth of flavor to the rice itself. So I kind of copied him on the cheap. I got, I bought a box of chicken stock. I bought some fish stock at the fish market near us, which was a great fish market. And then a can of San Marzano tomatoes.
Mm.
The sort of all that juice from the tomato can, you know? And I started to sort of like just alternate the three in there. And as you're going about 10 minutes, then the rice is starting to cook. And then that's when you start to add the seafood.
Right.
And it's kind of fairly idiot-proof at this point. I bought like a bag of clams from the fish market, medium-sized ones, not too big, not too small. And you just sort of nestle them into the rice in sort of concentric circles. And I guess this was the one thing that was a challenge. Like clams can take longer to open than you think.
Definitely, especially on a grill where there's no kind of steaming.
Yeah, you can. If you want to do some top, I try not to. But yeah, they're going to take like a good 10 minutes to open. Although then the thing is, this is not a bad thing because with paella, unlike risotto, like you want that crust to form on the bottom of the sucarat.
The sucarat, that is right.
So it's like you don't want to mess with it and it's okay for that crust to be forming. And then as the clams start to pop open, then I had some peeled shrimp. And then I bought fluke, if you have like halibut or flounder, some sort of white fish. And if you have skin off pieces of fish, those cook so quickly.
Yeah.
So you nestle some shrimp in there, nestle some fish in there, and those cook like in a couple of minutes. As soon as they're opaque, they're basically done. And then some jarred piquillo peppers, slice those up. And then peas are traditional. I went to the market, they had really beautiful snap peas. So I just sort of did a chiffonade of those, threw those on there, some parsley, and... I mean, it was done.
Sounds awesome.
Took it off and you bring it to the table and it's big and beautiful and all this seafood over there.
It's pretty fun.
I think we all have friends who are not meat eaters. So it's a good thing to throw on the grill when you don't know what to grill for your non-meat eating friends. But it's kind of awesome. So we're hot. We're hungry. What are we drinking? We got to cool off. Carl, what's on the menu?
Well, I'm sort of notorious for being a little bit of a lightweight when it comes to drinking. I can have half a drink and be like, woo, yeah. So if I'm going to be hanging out all day.
Cheap date music.
Yeah, exactly. Day drinking, hanging out for several hours. I keep it light, so I'm big into spritzers. And my other drink that I haven't had yet, but I'm really excited about because it sounds like it's going to just make my summer. It's a sherry spritzer.
I like the dry sherry.
Don't. I do.
This whole started with the name.
So wait, what did you say?
Yeah, it's got a Spanish name.
What is it?
Rebujito.
You can't even pronounce that.
Yeah, I did. You did. I just did.
Out of breath, did she?
Rebujito.
Rebujito. Yeah,
that's how you pronounce it.
But can I tell you what it is? It's dry sherry, first of all, which is delicious. It's not the sweet Marsala stuff.
I know. That's Marsala.
Lemon lime soda and lime and lemon rounds in it.
Who wrote the sherry book last year? Was it
Talia?
Yeah, Talia from Punch.
She has one in her book.
All right. Talia's awesome from punchdrink.com. That book was really cool. Awesome cover for the sherry book. But Americans don't like sherry.
I am American. I like sherry.
The mixologists out there like them. No, you don't.
They just don't know. I didn't like the sherry that my dad poured for great aunt Jeanette every holiday, but it was like candy syrup.
All right. Rick, what do you got?
So I like big batch cocktails or drinks, actually. So when I have a barbecue and I'm having people over, I usually do non-alcoholic big batch something and a alcoholic big batch something. And I usually start with something infused. So I'll do a syrup, throw in some herbs, throw in some citrus peel, throw in some fruit, whatever seasonal, a few pieces of rhubarb or strawberries or lemon zest or grapefruit zest. And all of a sudden you've got a syrup that can go into a tea or a lemonade or a limeade. Or you have something that can go into a gin cocktail, a vodka cocktail, a tequila cocktail, and then just, you know, make a gallon of it.
Then you can use that for a virgin and non-virgin
version. And that way everybody's taken care of. So while I'm showing off at the grill,
right,
I don't have to make any cocktails. And nobody has to do anything. They're just pouring pitchers of whatever's there.
I like that.
Rick made a beautiful one with plums and lemon verbena.
I love lemon verbena too. Actually, I planted some this weekend, and that's another really great thing too. If you have herbs in your garden, you can just throw those into your infusion as well.
Basil is nice. It's very basil. Summery.
You know, parsley and lemon are actually really good too. If you it's a really good way to do a refreshing cold brew tea. So
you'll make the syrup and it's basically the lemon rinds, or do you put the fruit in there, the meat as well?
No, so for the syrup you just do the zest.
Okay.
And then you can just squeeze the lemon juice directly into the tea or
Yeah.
But if parsley and lemon zest and tea bags, put them in a gallon of water, let them sit overnight, and all of a sudden you wake up the next morning, you've got like this really bright, refreshing tea.
That's not the syrup. That's just the tea.
That's just the tea. It's a total cold brew.
And then sweeten that with some basic simple syrup.
Yeah.
But you could make that alcoholic if you wanted to.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Totally. This summer, because my job at home is to make my wife happy. That's what I do.
That's good.
Cook. That's what I do. I cook, I clean, I grill. Making palomas, which we've written about in the magazine a lot. And that essentially is good tequila of the silver variety, fresh squeezed grapefruit juice. And I think there is few greater leaps between like store-bought and fresh. And like a store-bought grapefruit juice in a carton, I find undrinkable.
Yeah.
Totally.
Fresh grapefruit juice from a good ripe ruby red grapefruit is like transcendent.
So good.
Mm-hmm. You take that, some good tequila, splash of club soda, some lime, and all of a sudden like you're in business. Mm-hmm. Super easy to make, but just so fresh and summery and... Yeah, it's kind of in that sort of margarita family, but not quite. I guess, although, I don't know. I don't think you would need sweetener in that. Rick, what do you think?
Not if you've got a really good grapefruit.
And that's it. You can tell. You can taste the grapefruit because some grapefruits will lean a little more bitter than others. But right. I think if you have a sweet grapefruit, I think you're fine.
Yeah. And some places will make that with grapefruit soda or
like
ting.
Ting from the Caribbean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tequila and ting. When I interviewed Michael Strahan, formerly of Kelly and Michael.
Yes, that's right.
Now of GMA. But that's Strahan was saying like that's his drink. He discovered it when he went on a vacation in the Caribbean, and now he buys cases of it.
I love it.
From someplace in LA, he gets it delivered to his house, and that's like his house drink, ting and tequila. We've drunk well, we've eaten well, but it's time for dessert, and it's finally warm out and sunny, so it's ice cream time, right?
Definitely.
Carl, what do you got?
I'm going to have any type of ice cream that goes with BA's Best Hot Fudge.
Oh, yeah. We made hot fudge in the June issue, right?
It's beyond.
I have not made it. Talk to me, because like hot fudge is one of those things, it can get all grainy or...
It's really candy making, so I think I've always been a little bit intimidated by it, and I've made plenty of like chocolate sauce or chocolate syrup. Not the same.
Because when you do have good hot fudge, you're like, oh my God. Well, this is so good.
The cold ice cream with the warm, and then it gets all like sticky fudgy on the bottom and starts to get... I don't like,
well,
yeah,
that's
that
the genius
fudgy
part
where you
about
scrape it
the,
up.
The old-fashioned like ice cream parlor... Sunday glasses. They're not the Coupe or the long ones, but the tall ones.
Yeah.
And all the fudge sort of collects at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you
have
that
long spoon
that get in there when you're all done with the ice cream. You're like, oh, but there's the good stuff at the bottom.
Delicious.
Wait, that's so how do we make it? Is it an involved process or?
It's a little bit involved, but it's not hard. And there's a combination of chocolate and cocoa. And then...
like dark chocolate chopped up?
Yeah, and a candy thermometer. I haven't made it yet, but you do need a candy thermometer because you have to get to that. It's not softball, and it's not hard crack, but one of those syrup stages.
For those of you who don't know what Carla's talking about, when you boil sugar, it turns into a form of caramel, but it goes from very light and clear to progressively darker.
And if you take a drop of that syrup and put it into cold water, you can tell where it is by what happens when it hits the water. So the syrupy stage is sort of dissolves and floats to the bottom, and then when you're at hard crack, which is basically caramel, when you put it in the cold water, it'll ball up into like a little marble. So
science class.
It's a little bit of science, but that because you're pushing it towards that caramel stage, that's where that chewiness comes from and like the elasticity of it. Yeah, right. So it's like a almost caramel
that
texture,
gooey, but yet
but
sort of glossy and syrupy.
That's the cooked sugar, and then there's cream at the end, and
But I think that's why the flavor of that sauce was so amazing, because you get that caramel flavor in addition to the chocolate and the cocoa. I mean, it's
amazing.
It's so addictive.
It's complex. And I remember as a kid, my parents always would have like the box, not like the pint, but the box of Breyers vanilla ice cream in the freezer. So I was always like, I don't know about this. and then like the container of Hershey's chocolate syrup in the fridge. But the chocolate syrup was just not the same.
It's not the same.
And even before that, in the 70s, when I was growing up, because I'm that old, the Hershey syrup used to come in a can.
Right. I remember that.
And you would
that.
Take like the can opener and pierce it on both sides.
Totally.
Like a can of Hawaiian Punch.
That was a cool can, actually.
It was cool. It was very like Warhol. But it's just, and then you'd have real hot fudge, and you're like,
Completely different. I mean, and I love to bake, and don't get me wrong, I'll make a galette and a crostata, but like it's not for baking. You don't always want to turn on the oven and bake.
No.
But if you make a big batch of this hot fudge, put it in a jar, it will hang out in the fridge for a month or two. And then it's all about just getting really good ice creams and letting everybody paddle up their own sundaes.
And you could heat it up, I guess, assume either in a microwave or
over
some simmering water.
Simmering water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's really not that hard. I mean, and if you have a good candy thermometer, it'll tell you on the side of the thermometer, like softball, hardball.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you need to do, though. You do need a thermometer.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's pretty easy.
You need a thermometer, you need a heavy bottom pan, and you need a whisk.
And 20
minutes. The recipe
is
BA's Best Hot Fudge. So that's all. And that you'll also need.
Rick Martinez, what do you got?
So as you were just talking about that, I actually was thinking maybe I should talk about ice cream sandwiches, just being a cookie and an ice cream kind of guy.
Certainly are.
Yeah. I mean, I like ice pops because I think, you know,
Say the cool word.
Paletas.
Yes.
Because it's easy. You're outside. It's portable. You can throw them in the cooler. Everybody gets one. You can walk around with it. You can go out.
Yeah, wait. But if you throw them in the cooler, you need a really cold cooler.
Well, I mean, you should have lots of ice.
Okay.
I mean, it'll be, you know, your beer is going to be nestled in there. Yeah, and you put your ice pops in there.
So give me two versions to make. I've never made paletas before, or two easy versions that I would enjoy.
So strawberry and lime is really good.
And what do I do? I'm pureeing strawberries in a blender?
Think of it as a frozen daiquiri. So you're basically throwing in some strawberries. You can use fresh, obviously, or you can use frozen if you have those. Throw in some mint, throw in some lime, some other herbs.
Well, lime, zest or juice?
Both, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. If you wanted to get a little crazy, you could throw in, you know, a quarter cup, half a cup of tequila.
Let's not get too crazy.
Okay.
I got kids, right?
Kid version. Got it.
All right. So we're pureeing mint, lime, zest, juice, strawberries in a blender.
With a little bit of water just to thin it out a little bit. And then literally pour those into your ice pop.
You don't need sugar? I thought you needed sugar.
You also need sugar, sorry.
Right, otherwise it'll just be too icy.
Right.
Sugar syrup or just straight sugar?
Straight sugar.
Do you push all that through a sieve first to get rid of the seeds in the strawberries?
You can, but I mean, if you have really good strawberries, you know, you'll have an extra little texture in there, which I don't mind.
No, but I have an 8-year-old who might.
So then
he's been known to complain about texture before.
Ah, well then definitely strain.
All right, so I like that one. But you, June, we're coming into strawberry season right now.
Oh my God, they're at the market this weekend.
I would push them through a fine mesh sieve because you want a little bit of the texture, not the seeds. You'll filter out the seeds, but get the pulp so that it's a little bit thicker.
So it's not just like a Good Humor Pop. All right, so that's one great version.
Right.
Well, give me another one.
Another one that I really like, I mean, this is a little bit more involved, but if you grill fruit, so you can go grill plums or peaches and then puree those with a little bit of yogurt or heavy cream. And then you can add a nut milk to it or just water, sugar, and then freeze that.
Yeah.
And so you've got like this really nice grilled peach flavor, especially, you know, when peaches or plums are in season.
Grilled is interesting. Yeah. So later this summer.
Yeah.
You got to think ahead. So when your fire's dying down from one weekend, throw your fruit on there and make your paletas for next weekend.
You can't rush the freezing process.
No, but you can throw those into the freezer. And then when you're ready, just pull them out, throw them in the blender.
Yeah, we had a recipe in like one of our first issues when we relaunched a magazine 5 years ago. We did a peach-sicle pop with like pureed fresh good peaches, cream, and like maybe some herbs. It was so simple, but yeah, just really sort of like, very indulgent.
Right.
Tasting.
And the cool thing also about the paletas or ice pops is you can also dip, you know, you can have dips around if you want them. So nuts or seeds or chili.
Melted chocolate.
Or I've seen people even dip into liquor. So you can, you know, take a non-alcoholic ice pop, dip it in rum or
tequila. Keep on trying to steer it back.
I mean, I like happy guests.
Yeah. Yeah. And buy some good, and also you can have fun buying cool shapes and molds.
I have the ones that were in one of the very early issues, they're stainless steel and kind of round. They sit in that frame. I bought them because they were in the magazine. I didn't work here yet. Yeah. They're really cool.
Yeah. I had two things I wrote down. I was going to say one, I always say I'm going to get this and I never do. But I contend that the greatest ice cream of all time is the mint chocolate chip from Baskin Robbins.
That's a lot of people really agree with you.
And my mom, she would always, she would buy like the white mint chocolate chip, you know, like it's got to be green. And then like what I love about the Baskin Robbins is like they're not chips. Like the Breyers would have these shingles and they were too like waxy and big. Like the Baskin Robbins was like this astral spray of like flecks of chocolate.
They're that like
would,
flakes.
Yeah, flakes like just swirl throughout it. And I was just like, wow, that's the best thing ever. And I never ever go, because you can buy a pint of the stuff.
You can.
And I think there's a Baskin Robbins not far from me, and I never do it. And like this is the summer I'm going to start buying Baskin Robbins. And like when my like wife and child are away somewhere, I'm just going to sit on the sofa and just eat the whole thing. So that's one thing. I'm going to do it. I'm committing to it. Also, I was going to say, if anyone is in New York City listening to this or visiting New York City, highly recommend going to Superiority Burger, which is Brooks Headley's vegetarian burger, fast food-ish sort of joint in the East Village. Brooks used to be the James Beard award-winning pastry chef at Del Posto. Anyways, his gelatos and sorbettos are
They're
just
amazing.
Insane. Mm. Oh, he goes to the market and just buys like the best fruit you can imagine. The flavors, the depth of flavors, the combinations are just sort of mind-blowingly good. They're beautiful. He did a labneh gelato once. That was like the best thing I've ever had in my life.
The last time I was there, I had green apple sorbet and creme fraiche sorbetta or gelato that were separated by this in ribbon of cashew butter.
Amazing. It's just the flavors he sort of extracts, and it's just wonderful. And it's funny because Superiority Burger is known for his sort of, when it originally started, kind of like his riff, almost like on an In-N-Out style burger, a Shake Shack burger, but vegetarian with the squishy bun and the American cheese and everything. And there's sides and everything now, but it's those gelatos and sorbettos that are just sort of...
They're amazing.
So if you're in New York this summer, it's worth the trek and worth the wait in line. Brooks Headley at Superiority Burger. Well, I'm hungry. Unfortunately, we have to go to work now. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. My name is Belle Cushing, one of the producers of our show. And I just wanted to remind you all that we are not just a podcast, we are also a magazine. And if you don't already subscribe, you can today with this special offer that we have for podcast listeners. 3 issues for just $5. If you go to bonapetite.com/summergrilling, you can get 3 issues starting with our June grilling issue for just $5. Plus, you also get a cool apron and a summer cocktail guide. So it's a pretty good deal. bonapetite.com/summergrilling. 3 issues for $5. This podcast was produced by myself and Carrie Polis, with editing by Mitra Kapoli, and additional help from Christina Che. And if you want to subscribe to our magazine, you can go to bonapetite.com/summergrilling. Thanks, guys.